Trend number two, China's new place in the world economy. An inevitable part of the new normal will be an expanded role for the Chinese economy. But what will that role be? How will China get from where it is today to where it needs to be? What opportunities will it create? And what problems will it present? To answer these questions, let's start with an examination of China's response to the Great Recession through August 2009. China's economy is still growing at between 8 and 9% per year, even with exports down by about 20% due to the recession. As John Malden pointed out recently at investorsinsight.com, stocks are up by a whopping 85% this year in China, while both real estate and commodity prices are on the rise. That's because the Chinese have put in place a fast-track monetary stimulus package that is very, very big relative to the size of China's economy. In fact, China's money supply rose by close to 30% in the month of June alone. China's stimulus package, announced at about the same time as the one in the U.S., amounted to about $586 billion. Some economists are predicting that the annualized growth rate in China could soon reach 15%. In fact, analysts at Goldman Sachs peg it at an astonishing 16.5%. Part of the reason for this instant impact is the absence of a liquidity trap that hampers Japanese and American efforts. As recently explained in Foreign Policy magazine, China can artificially stimulate its economy with greater ease and rapidity than the U.S. can, because it's essentially still a communist dictatorship with a thin overlay of market-based activity. The U.S. government can print money and hand it out, but it can't tell people what to do with it. It can't force banks to lend, and it can't force consumers or corporations to spend. Meanwhile, China is doing exactly that. It is ordering its banks to lend out the money, and it's forcing companies to borrow it and spend it as quickly as possible. For years, Western observers have expressed surprise over the pace of China's growth, but it's not all that surprising when you have that kind of power. However, when you force these developments artificially, they sometimes work, but they don't work forever. China's large, unused manufacturing capacity is proof of that principle. There always comes a day of reckoning. It's a bit like the 13-story building that quickly rose in Shanghai, only to collapse last summer because it was so poorly constructed. Right now, China is furiously stimulating its economy in the hopes of keeping its people, many of whom are unemployed and hungry, from rioting until the global economy settles down again and the demand for exports returns. The state-controlled banks upped their loans by more than 200% in the first half of 2009, pouring out more than $1 trillion in loans. This stimulated urban fixed investment by 33.6%, while factory output grew by more than 10%. China is also making huge investments in infrastructure, which required the hiring of lots of workers who were unemployed after factories closed due to lack of demand. This, of course, stabilized the labor market and sent retail sales up 15% in May and June. But everyone, including China itself, agrees that this sort of growth is artificial and not sustainable. The Associated Press recently quoted China's own Bureau of Statistics spokesman as saying, "The difficulties and challenges in the current economic development are still numerous. The basis of the rebound of the people's economy is not stable." For example, the banks and corporations have cooperated with the Chinese dictum to lend and spend. But when you force a bank to give out money, it's very likely to issue a large number of bad loans. China has little alternative to the kinds of extreme short-term measures we've been discussing, because it has based its three-decade economic miracle almost entirely on Western consumers, especially Americans. China manufactured as much as it could in consumer goods. It shipped much of that to the United States, and we gave them dollars. China turned around and invested those dollars in U.S. Treasury bills and bonds. It now has $2 trillion in its reserves. And the big question is how to get rid of them and not destroy the value of the dollar by dumping billions or even trillions of dollars onto the open market. China realizes that depending heavily on the American consumer is not a viable strategy going forward. Americans will return to spending, but not at the level of 2006. So, China is now moving into a strategy of using those dollars to buy up real assets worldwide, according to the Financial Times. Its largest state-owned companies, such as PetroChina, Chinalco, China Telecom, and Bank of China, are all hunting for good deals in natural resources, corporate acquisitions, real estate, and other tangible assets. Over the coming decade, China's overall objective is to move its economy from one that relies on exports, mainly to the U.S., to one that relies on investment and domestic spending. In short, it is trying to create its own internal class of American-style consumers. It is giving people subsidies for buying cars and home appliances, and has introduced tax cuts to encourage people to spend more and save less. As a result, China is now the largest manufacturer of automobiles in the world, having surpassed the United States this year. According to a recent Herman Trend Alert, Chinese car sales were up by 48% in June over the year before, while half of the largest retailers in the world are moving into the Chinese market. Signs are already appearing that China's recovery can't proceed at the pace it has set for itself without significant bumps in the road. According to Business Week, the Shanghai stock market experienced a sharp sell-off in July, suggesting instability. Both the U.S. and China can expect the recovery to be marked by setbacks. One of the greatest stumbling blocks for both nations is going to be the environment. There are two main parts to this subject. One is how nations will cooperate on controlling pollution, even as their economies and industries are expanding. And the other is who will benefit and how from new technologies that produce clean energy. The two are likely to go hand in hand, and the nations that are innovative and aggressive will benefit handsomely. China announced last summer that it would introduce strict controls in the wake of its stimulus package to ensure that increased economic activity didn't result in increased pollution. China is arguably the largest polluter in the world. It is building coal-fired power plants at the rate of one a week. According to the Washington Post, as part of China's stimulus plan, it committed to installing 20 gigawatts of solar power by 2020. That's the equivalent of 20 new nuclear power plants. China is setting its sights on dominating the world in clean energy technology, and a race is on across India and Asia to join the rush to make money from this new industry. China is giving a subsidy of about 50% to new solar projects, the most lavish subsidy in the world. China also plans to install 150 gigawatts of wind power by 2020. It is providing tens of billions of dollars for the development of plug-in hybrid vehicles, exploiting the new sources of electricity. And of course, all of this developmental business is being given to Chinese firms, thereby stimulating its economy further. How does all this add up for China's new position in the global economy? We offer the following four forecasts for your consideration. First, in terms of recovery, China will cover a wide variety of its present problems and past sins by using its $2 trillion in reserves to artificially stimulate its economy. But within the next few years, the strain will begin to show as uncompetitive Chinese companies go bankrupt and the rising entrepreneurs in that nation learn the bumps and bruises of a risk-taking approach to commerce. Growth will continue in China due to the enormous size of its population, but it won't be sustained at its present level, even with a rising middle class. Every economy matures and slows its growth, and China's one-child policy will slow its population growth as well. Second, in 5 to 10 years, despite its teething problems, China will be much larger and stronger than it is now. China's economy is as big today as the combined economies of Brazil, Russia, and India. But even if it can sustain its recent growth rate, it will take decades to equal the U.S. economy. Eventually, because of its vast and growing population, China will be a larger economy than the U.S. But that fact alone won't dictate the relationship between the U.S. and China, or between China and the rest of the world. The defining issue will be which nation leads in key technologies, including energy, aerospace, pharmaceuticals, medical technology, consumer goods, and transportation. Right now, the United States is still in a strong technological position, where it can not only develop its own technological base for the future, but can also participate in the development of technologies in nations such as China, India, and South Korea. Third, speculators who are trying to leverage China's recovery into quick profits in commodities will soon face disappointment. Artificial stimulation of an economy tends to produce bubbles, because there is a lot of short-term profit to be made by speculators. That's happening now in China's commodities markets, in its real estate market, and in its stock market, which has soared by 85%. The commodities market is particularly risky. Speculators, including both companies and individuals, are buying up copper and shipping it to China to store it, counting on a rising price. This, of course, reduces the supply of copper globally, which drives up the price in a self-fulfilling prophecy. However, China really doesn't need all that copper. As a result, 1 million tons of it are sitting idle in warehouses. And that not only forces the price up artificially, but makes it appear that demand for copper in China is soaring. At some point, that copper will have to come back into the market, and the price will collapse. This is undoubtedly true of other commodities as well. And fourth, the U.S. dollar will continue to remain strong, largely because China can't afford to abandon it. China holds about $2 trillion in U.S. currency. Nevertheless, it has argued for replacement of the dollar as the international reserve currency with the International Monetary Fund's special drawing right, an accounting unit that is based on four currencies: the dollar, the euro, the pound sterling, and the Japanese yen. As CNN.com reports, if the proposal were approved, Americans would likely have to pay higher interest rates on their mortgages, car loans, and credit cards. However, the trends editors argue that this is simply posturing on the part of China and several other creditor nations. In reality, China needs the dollar to remain strong for several reasons. First, the U.S. is the most stable country in the world, both politically and economically. China's investment would face greater risk if it were placed elsewhere. Second, the U.S. will remain the number one buyer of Chinese goods. China's purchase of U.S. debt simply allows Americans to buy China's exports, which will remain a crucial component of China's economic growth for at least the next decade.